Hi, my name's Mandy Giles, and I'm talking today, Saturday, the 21st of March 2015, with Barbara and Alan Bagnall. We're meeting at the Curtin premises of the Canberra and District Historical Society as part of the Curtin Living Memories Project. Barbara was born Barbara Tanner, and her family property, Allura, is at the back of Curtin. The property is 1,000 acres and eventually was resumed by the ACT government, and much of it is now the horse paddocks behind Curtin. Interestingly, Barbara and her husband Alan live at the top of Jennings Street in Curtin, and they look over fairly much was what was the old Allura property. Barbara met Alan Bagnall when they were both working at the Australian Bureau of Statistics. While Barbara had to leave the public service when she and Alan were married, Alan progressed up the ranks to be Australia's chief statistician. They've lived in their home for nearly 50 years, and they're both determined to stay there as long as possible. Barbara, I might start with you first. What was it like growing up on the property Allura?
It was fun, but I would say it was rather lonely because no other children to play with. So it was a fairly quiet life, as far as children go, and we certainly didn't go to scouts or guides or anything like that. It just wasn't available. Well, we couldn't get to it. And later on, going to school, you went by the bus or you rode your bike. So that was pretty much it.
Where did you go to school?
Girls' Grammar School.
Okay. So did you ride your bike there ever?
Oh, yes.
Mostly
you did? Pretty regularly. Once I was about 12. Once I got a bike, I rode there.
Which?
Not every day, but... And it was dirt road at that stage, so it wasn't much fun.
So you'd ride dirt road along what is the Cotter Road now?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic.
So, yes.
Who was in your family?
A brother, Robert, and a sister, Jill.
And Robert lives in Curtin as well,
yes,
now, I believe.
Yes, he's in Curtin, and my sister, Jill, is in Canada.
Okay. So had your parents actually grown up in Canberra themselves? Or?
No, my mother came from Wagga. Or Tarkata, actually. And my father came from, I guess you'd say, Bowral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they came down and bought that property?
Yes. It had been, it was a soldier settlement block, and several people had had it before Dad, but they couldn't make a go of it. And once he moved there, he made a go of it and managed to do so well he could put three children through private school and also buy another property. So, he was a hard worker and he managed to do it.
Tell us about what some of the enterprises were on the farm.
There was sheep and then later cattle and also very championship wheat crops.
Ah.
So, yes, it was mainly sheep, but then later turned to cattle, particularly once my brother was working on the property.
Because you don't see too many wheat crops around here nowadays,
no,
do you?
No.
In fact...
Well, you do out Yass way.
That's right.
Mm.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing you mentioned to me, that he was quite upset when Pryor planted cork trees on his wheat country.
He was very upset. He did not appreciate Mr. Pryor doing that.
And those cork trees are down at the back of Dunstan Street that people can walk through nowadays on the reserve there.
Yes.
Hmm.
And it was beautiful country. And I don't think he wouldn't have appreciated the cork trees.
Did you own the land on the other side of the Cotter Road as well?
No,
on this side. No. So is any of your property now where houses are, or is it pretty much all that country that's the horse paddocks?
The property came through to...
Theodore Street.
Theodore Street, virtually.
Oh,
and it went through to...
Government House.
No, wait a minute. You've got me mixed up.
Anyway, there. So it did... some houses are on your old property, basically.
Oh, yes.
Virtually all of Curtin is on the old Allura property.
Oh, right. And did you have much to do with other country families in the adjoining properties or anything?
Mainly weekends. Sunday afternoon was Sunday afternoon tea. And so we went, there were about five or six families that had it in turn, and the children went along and... did what children did, get bored and do the wrong things most probably.
And which families were they?
DeSalis's, Campbell's, Baird's, who were further out, Anderson's. Well, I suppose those were the main ones.
Yeah. And you were telling me the other day that the house itself is over pretty much where the Tuggeranong Parkway is.
Just below the parkway, yes. We can't actually really define just where it was. My brother some years ago and myself went down there and we really couldn't quite work it out. But it is in that area, in the group of, that clump of trees.
Mm. And your mother stayed on there till what, she had to move into a home?
No, she moved out and bought a home in Deakin.
Mm-hmm.
And so was there for many years and then moved on to a nursing retirement village. She did for many, many years have adjustment horses on the property.
Ah, right.
So that gave her a good interest and a little bit of pocket money.
Mm. And so your father passed away.
Yes, he died in 56.
Okay.
Very young.
At what stage approximately did the ACT government resume the property, would you say?
That's a good question. Can you remember?
I would think in the into the late 60s, early 70s, because I was picking up stones and rocks for my rock wall in the garden, then my landscaping from the old property when your mother was still in the house.
Yes.
Mm. So at that stage, though, they had built on some of the property.
Yes.
We were the last ones to build virtually in Curtin, weren't we?
In Jennings Street.
Well, certainly in Jennings Street.
Mm. Mm. Well, we might actually get on to that as well now. In fact, I might get you, Alan, to tell us a little bit about how you came across the block.
Oh, fine, yes. Well, we were holidaying up at Yamba. At that stage, we were living in Nathan Street, Deakin, and we're up in Yamba, one of our favourite holiday spots, and we realised that the Garran land was coming up for sale that year, and I rang up the Department of Interior to get the copies of the plans, and to our delight, we discovered that not only was the area of Garran being subdivided, but also there was a single block in Jennings Street, Curtin, on the old family, Barbara's old family property, which had previously been part of the park on the corner of Reby Place and Jennings Street, and this particular block was being released for housing development, and so we were delighted. And so when we came back to Canberra, I had an important meeting at the office and couldn't attend the auction, so Barbara was going in as a complete novice at an auction to do the purchasing, and as it turned out, all the big money for the auction was going to Garran, and we were able to get the block at Jennings Street, Curtin, at a bargain price. In fact, I think it was the cheapest block of the whole subdivision in Jennings Street. And so we bought that, and house was designed by one of my old schoolmates, Peter Courtney, and we moved in August 66. Mm.
Well, people listening to this won't realise, but it probably is one of the pick blocks in Curtin. It's up the top. It's got beautiful views northeast over the suburb, and you've got the benefit of looking out over your property from your back veranda.
Yes,
so
looking out at the Brindabellas, but being both being Franklin skiers, we like the Brindabellas, and I was a bushwalker for 50-odd years, and so we are very lucky to see skylines back and front. And I have a philosophy that if you can see a horizon, you know there's a future.
Oh, I like the sound of that. I might actually go back a bit, and Alan, you can tell us a bit about your childhood and why you ended up in Canberra.
Yeah, fine. Well, I came to Canberra in May 1933, which is just about a month away from being 82 years. And my father was a patent examiner, and the patent office was designated to transfer to Canberra to build up the Canberra population and the public service functions. And it was in the middle of the Depression, and as a result, I think it's fair to say that customs examiners were pretty quiet and unassuming sort of people, and the challenge of going from a city where they had the family infrastructure of several generations to a country town which had a population of less than 5,000 people was a rather daunting challenge. And somebody in the government made a brilliant decision, which was advertised to all officers subject to transfer, that all officers transferring to Canberra would be guaranteed their children full employment when their children completed their schooling, which was really an important sort of contribution, because as you can imagine, in the middle of the Depression, anybody with a job was pleased to have one, and they were worried about their children. And so the Commonwealth did very well out of that, because there was another patent examiner called Tom Dean, and he had a son called Billy, and Billy went on to become Sir William Dean, of Judge of the High Court, and later into become Governor-General, and I rose up through the stats to become the acting statistician of the Bureau of Statistics. So they did very well out of that particular group.
They sure did. And were you friends with Bill Dean?
I knew Bill, yes. We were living very close together. He was in La Perouse Street, and we were living in Derville Crescent. And yes, so I knew Bill, and even today, when I meet Bill in the street, he'll say good day, Alan, and so we still had contact.
Wow, with 5,000 people, a lot of people must have known each other, I suppose.
Yes. When we first moved here, we were over in just in front of the War Memorial in Chirrawong Gardens, and we were there from 33 to 37. When we first came to Canberra, we were in the old Beecham House, which is now the Ian Potter Building, and that was a temporary accommodation for public service on transfer until houses became available. And then we moved from Chirrawong Gardens to Derville Crescent in 1937, and that's in behind Manuka, up near the Bass Gardens. And from the front deck of Derville Crescent, we could look right across Canberra and see the War Memorial. Now, you can't see more than 50 metres down the road, for the trees have grown, and so Canberra has shrunk.
Yeah. So, you know, you had quite a big career in the public service, by the sound of it.
Went to study at Talapia, first at Ainslie School and then as primary school, and then came across to Talapia Park, and from Talapia Park went over to the new Canberra High School.
Oh, okay. Where was that?
That's now the University Art School on the university campus.
Okay.
That was the old Canberra High School.
Right.
And I must admit that I was probably a pretty playful sort of person in those days, and a little bit laid back. And when my father received my annual report from fourth year, which is the year before the leaving certificate, there was a personal letter included from the headmaster saying that, "Dear Mr. Bagnall, I think that your son has the potential to be a Rhodes Scholar. Unfortunately, he's built in the transportation sense rather than the academic sense, and he strongly recommended that my father stop wasting money and send me out to work." So that didn't go down too well domestically, and so I was moved to went to the boys' grammar school, and in the colloquial phrase, I pulled my finger out that year and became Ducks of the Great Canberra Grammar School.
Ah, well, there you go.
Yes.
So did you study at ANU after that?
I studied at the Canberra University College.
Oh, okay.
I did part-time study, and the public service had part-time free places, which they covered your fees and you attended lectures. And then towards the end of my degree, the public service, under the initiative of Keith Archer, who was then the Australian statistician, that he was concerned that the number of Canberra schoolboys that were coming through into the public service had no life other than life in Canberra, and he felt it highly desirable that they have an opportunity to go out and see the big wide world. And so full-time free places were commenced in about 1953, and I was one of the first students to go on that scheme. So I went off to Warman College to finish my degree, and I was on full pay, and I was the second highest paid person in the college. The master beat me by £100 a year.
You did very well, didn't you, out of the policies of the day?
Yes.
So looking back at life and living in Curtin, I mean, you could have gone to live somewhere else, I suppose, other than Canberra or Curtin, but Why have you stayed where you are in Canberra and in Curtin and obviously enjoyed that, do you think?
Well, you know, when we moved into Curtin, Barbara had been in Canberra 31 years and I've been in Canberra 33 years. And as a result, we had built up our network of friends and social infrastructure, and we were both very keen on skiing, and both members of the Canberra Alpine Club. I was a former president there, and I was also sort of very keen on bushwalking. I'd been leading bushwalks since 1950, and so we had a whole network of friends and associates outside Curtin, which made us somewhat different to a lot of the people who moved to Curtin from outside Canberra or very limited time in Canberra, and were dependent on the neighbours to build up their social infrastructure and their school friends and things of that nature. But we were somewhat different. That we were well established in our activities, and as a result, I was a product of Canberra. That I was interested in skiing and interested in bushwalking, which is two of the skills that you acquire and interest you acquire being a citizen, a resident of the bush capital, I think is what I would say. And we had no motivation to move beyond Curtin. We have a house down at Rosedale on the south coast, but there was absolutely no way would we want to leave Canberra to go down there to retire. And we are hopeful to see our days out in Curtin. And I should make the comment that we happened to recarpet our house back in January this year, and we'd probably be the only 85-year-olds that have taken that course of action of actually recarpeting a house at that age. But that's our long-term intention, and I made sure that the carpet had a guarantee of 25 years.
Oh, good on you. And how about you, Barbara? Has it been good for you being able to basically live where you grew up as well?
Oh, yes, I've thoroughly enjoyed it, yes. Mm. But in the early days, I did a lot of volunteer work, so that kept me busy. And then once we adopted children, I didn't do so much, and then I got back to it again afterwards. And so I didn't work, paid for work, but I did my fair share of voluntary work.
What kind of things did you like to volunteer for?
Well, I was doing Meals on Wheels. I did a lot of driving people to hospitals and appointments. So those were the main two.
Yeah.
But, no, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
And your daughter lives not so far away still.
She's in Warramanga, yes, yeah. Yes.
Now, you did, when we talked earlier, you told me a little bit about the fires, and yes, you might like to relate, because you are right on the front line there, yes, at the back of Curtin, yes, what the day was like for you.
Well, the day started off very good. Saturday afternoon, I was playing my normal game of golf up at the Federal Golf Course, and we were somewhat surprised that the greens were covered with soot, but we still putted out and what have you. And the professional came round in a cart halfway through the round to say anybody in Gordon or in that area should go home straight away. And I thought, oh, I'm up in Curtin, so I won't do that, until I finally got to the clubhouse and the head steward called out, "Alan, you better get home. Your wife needs you best. Seriously." So I dropped my clubs and came home, and was very heavy smoke all the way out to our place. Parked the car and went up to the backyard and out the back fence, and we could see the flames about a mile away. And I wasn't that concerned. And then a helicopter came over with a megaphone saying, "Move off that ridge straight away. The fire's coming there very quickly." So I raced inside to change into long trousers and long sleeve shirt, and put the hose over the back fence. By the time I got back, the hose had melted on the back fence, and the back garden was alight. And it was then all go, go, go. And one of the features of being top of a hill, you get a good view, but as far as water pressure is concerned, you tend to take second and third place. And so I had a very small jet on my hose. And fortunately, the helicopters were around dropping water, and their woodshed took off, and the flames went right across the house. And we have a flat roofed house. Had we had a pitched roof house, I'm sure the house would have been burned, because the wind was very strong. It would have lifted the tiles and put the flames in under. But being a flat roofed house, it went through, went over. And a helicopter came over and could see my plight. And unfortunately, the helicopter pilot wasn't very sort of precise in his directions, and he, when he dropped his bucket of water, he got me on the steps about 10 feet away from the woodshed, and I can assure you a bucket of water coming down from that height is a little bit deflating. And then I sent the back fence is all gone. We had probably 6 or 8 trees over 60 feet tall, and they were all burning, and I said to Barbara, "I better leave," so she took one of the cars out, and I went down and sat on the gutter thinking it's all gone, and 2 fire trucks came in about 5 o'clock, and our block is adjacent to the existing park, and they came up the park, and I could see my predicament, and the 2 fire trucks worked solely on our place and saved it, everything was fine. And when I went and talked to the firefighters, both vehicles had come down from Lismore by their own volition, and had as volunteers, and they saved our house. And I had one suggestion for them, that one of the trucks, fire units, was from Woodburn, a town near Lismore, and I suggested that that wasn't the best name for a bush fire brigade.
That's great.
We have a series of photographs of the place, which was, we were very, very lucky to survive. And I was a member of the Lions Club at that stage, and I had just finished selling Lions Christmas cakes. I think I sold 400 cakes up at Woden Plaza in December, and all the empty cartons were in the back of the carport, and the fire had burnt right down to the fence and was blowing into the carport, so the house could have gone up quite easily.
Very lucky. And when you were on the farm, did you remember fires coming through at all?
Yes, we had 2 or 3 come through, and one time we had to leave the house. The other times we were all right, but actually they didn't come that close to the house.
But it is with that facing that northwesterly, when the prevailing wind can be quite bad.
We were right where we were, but close enough to be worried.
Yeah, that's right. Is there anything else you'd like to share about Curtin and about life that I haven't asked you? Is there something you'd like to have talked about?
Well, I suppose that in our street that we are fortunate. We have 3-4 neighbours that are still there from the early days. A large number of other people have moved in, and I think that Curtin has got a fairly large transitory sort of population, and so we feel quite lucky that we have these neighbours nearby. In fact, we had drinks only 2 or 3 weeks ago with one of our neighbours, with sort of 3 of our old-timers there, so sort of recounting the days, and we're all determined to stay there as long as possible, and have no intention of going to retirement villages in that nature. Mm.
You're not the first person that's told us that.
Yes, and we're very fortunate too, having being on the facing onto the Greenland behind us on the Allura horse paddock. The concrete path is there, and so we have a large number of citizens going past, and that adds to the social activity. And then when our lemon tree is in full fruiting, we have a basket hanging on the back gate with a little sign saying, "If you enjoy lemons, please be our guest." And it's quite fascinating. When people first take the lemons, they tend to sneak away with them. And once they've done that, they tend to wave and say thank you, and off they go again. And it becomes quite a feature of their morning walk, of picking up their lemons.
Fantastic. Well, I just wanted to say thank you very much for agreeing to come along, because it's really great to be able to speak to someone who's been in this area for so long.
Right, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks very much, Mandy.
Thank you. Thank you.